So, well, thank you, Jim and François. No, it's just one. Thank you for inviting me to join the merry crowd of authors and commentators for this book. It's an honor also, and to have a chance and discuss Fiona and Gerasimo's text. So I'm not going to repeat anything about Greece or Turkey. The empirical dimension of the discussion is in the chapter. What I tried to do, answering Phil's instructions, is to reflect on what we could draw from this chapter in terms of broader discussions, or to maybe drift a little bit aside from the classical discussion on liberal states and try to bring some kind of critical insights from a perspective of someone, that is me, who is not working in Europe, and my primary field of expertise is actually refugee and migration policies, but in the Horn of Africa and in the Arabian Peninsula. So the starting point of the chapter is to marry two states that are border states. One is on the European side of the Schengen space, the EU border, and the other one is on the other side. And the dynamics of border making, and I'm not taking here the border as a sort of eternal dichotomous principle that is intrinsically defining what states are and what they will do, but that's something that is worked through and practiced and constructed over time by policies, but also by all kind of dynamics, both public and private. So here we're starting from this idea that we could discuss together two states just because they are contiguous. And that sort of makes this rationale behind this forced marriage, which, you know, Turkey and Greece have tried to get a divorce for quite a lot of time, and you explain how. but we're putting them together again in the same room. So from this kind of weird idea of marrying again Greece and Turkey, I sort of drifted in trying to think alongside the chapter at what exactly do we get if we try to think seriously the role of migration and migration management or migration control in the processes of state building in the long term, the long durée, what you try to do, taking a very a diachronic historical perspective with a chronological structure to your chapter. Well, we might get some kind of Attilian story. We might want to look at migration making or migration controlling and state making as organized violence, the way Charles Tilly talked about war making and state making. So when we get the story about state formation in Greece and Turkey, when we get the story about nation building, building the nation, we actually get, and that's a very strong point, a story of population displacement, segregated inclusion or differentiated inclusion and mass exclusion of illiberal cosmopolitan rules, which are both ensuring the coexistence of groups but also creating hierarchies between groups and minorities. We get a story of ethnic nations, or rather nations that create a mythology of ethnic homogeneity and cultural homogeneity. Basically, we get a type of migration politics that go way beyond and also below the liberal premises that are sort of the implicit background of this book. But my point is that this is not an exotic story. This is not a story of faraway lands. This is also a story that we can learn, and a lesson we can learn by looking at Greece, the cradle of liberal democracy, and Turkey, the cradle of cosmopolitanism in many ways, and of republican politics since the 1920s. And it's a story that we can import back to the core of liberal democracies, that is to say, Western Europe and Northern America, if you want to be a bit, if we want to be, let's say, Eurocentric and North American-centric here. So basically, the argument that I'm trying to make based on this idea is made of three points that are, I hope, articulated together. First, it's an argument on how ethnic states and multicultural or cosmopolitan empires are the roots of contemporary states that we observe today and their policies and practices. And basically, when we're looking at the practices and rationale behind nation building in both Greece and Turkey, we have a story of a violent practices of building the nation of political demography, as Myron Wiener analyzed for India, for instance, but also for other countries. So we have first a story of a shift, or let's say the building of exclusive citizenship regimes based on a fiction of the ethnic state, the ethnic homogeneity of the state, a fiction of autochthony. We've talked about, you know, in the German case of alloctonius and autochthonous. Let's not forget that these so-called concepts are actually coming from very powerful Greek myth, and I'm saying myth in the first sense of the term, the mythology of the autochthonous dimension of the Athenian population is a myth. It comes from Homer, Hesiodus, and it's reiterated in the literature. It is not a historical reality. It has never been. But it's a myth that is founding a lot of political discourses, and it's founding contemporary regulations that are the basis upon which we grant citizenship. So it's an interesting story about the power of myth. And this construction of the state is based on violence, deportation, genocide, the Armenian one, yes, and today, deathly refoulement, that is to say, refoulement practices at the borders of Europe that are generating death. And we remember the image of the small child, Aylan Kurdi, but we can think about many other corpses. So it's a bloody story. What about cosmopolitanism in there? Well, we can still talk about cosmopolitanism, but as the literature has shown, we're talking about a hierarchized and imperial cosmopolitanism that is going from empires, the way it was managed in Ottoman Turkey, and even in classical Greece, to now. And for now, we have the whole post-colonial literature that is telling us about hierarchies, inequalities, Omi Baba, Robin Cohen, Stephen Vertovic, Pina Werner, etc., etc., and also Camille Schmoll and myself and colleagues. The second point is a point that you are more familiar with, maybe. The dilemmas of state control, but also non-state regulations. How do these other actors, markets or transnational networks, are participating into labor export control or diaspora politics? We should also factor in smugglers and other brokers, because these actors are also embedded in dilemmas of control, especially in times of crisis. And today we have a sort of vilification or devilization of smugglers and all the other non-state actors, as opposed to the good state that is providing ethical regulation of migration. And here maybe these moral characteristics should be questioned. Other issues of control have been addressed, so maybe I can go a bit quicker on that. How do state control immigration, thinking through the gaps, but also how policies are shaped by ideological framing coming from the media, from so-called public opinion, from bureaucracies, whether the EU and or the governments, the governmental one. Which is leading us to a question also on the importance of regime. If you start looking at a trans-historical impact of policies over migration and citizenship governance, maybe we want to look at turning point when regime change, and that's the case for Greece, and that's also the case for Turkey. Which is taking us to another set of questions, is also when we're talking about liberal state, we're oftentimes assuming that we're having a sort of trans-historical reality or characteristic of liberal states. And of course, this changed over time. So another question would be how liberal are liberal states, especially with this historical perspective, which takes us to my final point, which is of course linked to the last of the second point. And it's trying to propose some kind of a test of the convergence hypothesis, which is, you know, taking a sort of contre-pied from the initial convergence hypothesis that it was framed, but talking about a neoliberal convergence hypothesis. Basically, looking at the work of Ayelet Shashar, of Stephen Moore, to take stock of the growing inequalities and hierarchization in migration management and citizenship granting. So both in mobility, residence, and citizenship rights. And starting from this, basically maybe rethinking what exactly is Europe exporting when it is externalizing its migration policy. Is it, as Sandra Lavanek told us initially, a sort of export of norms and of liberal practices outside of Europe? Or is it maybe actually externalizing illiberal practices of migration governance? And we do have examples of that in Turkey, where at the liminal, at the beginning of the crisis, there was sort of an open border between Syria and Turkey. And now, because of externalization policies, the border is closed. Same thing is happening in Mali, same thing is happening in Niger, same thing is happening in Mauritania, same thing is happening in Jordan with the Jordan Compact, same thing is happening in Lebanon, same thing is happening in Senegal, in Cameroon, in Morocco, in Libya, in Tunisia, in Algeria. So we have here a claim, a very strong claim, on the actual impact beyond discourse of externalization. Thank you.
Thank you.